The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life settles in your soul. In your soul, in your soul. A century of dreams haunted the loggers and the cowboys. Double-crossed by Old Sack and Salem.
And we are the state of Jefferson.
We are. Here we are.
Our music went a little long there. That's all right.
That's okay.
It was just reinforcing that we are the soul of Jefferson.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Good morning.
We needed that to go longer.
Yeah, really. Good morning, Jefferson.
Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa and
Janet Chandler
and
Wynn Carpenter.
And we are here with Jefferson State of Mind.
And we're all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Not really.
Yes, we are.
You are.
We are.
I'm not.
You better be.
Janet always is.
I am.
And we're broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading.
Mm-hmm.
96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, your talk radio. And we are streaming live, as we always are, streaming worldwide at KCNR1460.com. That's KCNR1460.com. And we archive, if you miss it here, you can go to programming and go to the archive and go to our program, and you can hear all our shows for years and years and years and years and years and years and years, because we archive forever.
And ever.
And ever.
Amen.
Sounds like a song.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, we just had a show on that was pretty interesting, talking about the budget and talking about the City of Reading employee situation and what's going on with them. They actually want to cut police, from what I understand, from what I heard on the previous show.
Is that cyclic? Does that happen every years or whatever?
You know,
It happened when Patrick was on. It's happening now. I mean, good grief, what's going on?
Well, you know, the thing is that they, according to what I heard, and I just got some clarification, there's anywhere from about like 140 to 160 new employees.
So are the inmates running the prison?
I have no idea. I have no idea what's going on, but I know there was a lot of numbers. But I mean, you know, bottom line is, I mean, this is what I got when I asked Vanessa. The bottom line is that basically, we have a lot of employees that we have added, and we're cutting police to have those added employees.
And then those employees vote, so it's difficult for the city council members to eliminate employees because the employees are not going to be happy at the next election.
Same as the police.
And it happens at the county level, too. So mm-hmm. It's not just a city problem.
Right.
Well, it isn't. Yeah, I mean, that's true. It happens there, too. And but I think with our sheriff's department, it might be a little different. They sort of go by attrition, I think. I don't know that they really we cut the officers. But in the city of Reading, we're cutting apparently 11 or 12 of them. And Vanessa said she could probably live with cutting six, okay? But, I mean, what are the other people, what are the other 140 do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my question. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's always people being cut and added to a budget, but, I mean, to
are they heavy on police? Is the sheriff department heavy on officers? Is the RPD heavy on officers? And if they are, if they're not able to get everything done, does that filtrate back to the DA not getting their stuff done? It's a big circle, and they all are independent on each other.
That's a good point.
And when you arrest somebody, you expect them to be prosecuted for the crime they commit. But when they take a prisoner, if you will, or somebody who's violated the law. They take him to jail, and then the guy gets kicked out before the officer even leaves the jail. Are you kidding? I know this has happened personally. I know this because of family members who work in law enforcement
sure.
have told me this several times. So what's going on?
Well, the state, for one thing, is very lenient in their laws. And so when you do arrest somebody, I mean, you know, if you arrest somebody for breaking the law, I mean, after a while, I mean, what's that going to be worth? You don't have enough jail space. You've got a lot of things that are are now crimes. That are not crimes, that were crimes. But if you arrest somebody because of the jail space and everything else, they just have to sort of have a catch and release type of thing.
Okay, jail space. Why are we still holding people that should be in prison? When they're still sitting in the jail, the county jail, why are they still sitting there when they should be...
A lot of it goes back to the DA, like you said.
State prison.
Yep.
Why are they not fighting harder to get these guys out of
yep.
Shasta County to the state prison to be held when the governor is doing what he's doing? So it is all affecting all of us in every way.
The governor and the state kicked it back on the counties to keep these people.
Right.
Because they wanted to save money by shutting down prisons.
Well, then it goes back to what I offered last year when I was out talking to people. Why don't we, as Northern California counties, band together and house our jail inmates that are state prisoners, essentially? Why don't we work together to create a spot in the High Desert Prison? Part of it's closed down, right? Why can the counties not budget together and create a association, if you will, organization, whatever it may be, to house those guys over there to get them out of Shasta County so we can put the criminals in our jail and get them off the street locally?
Well, Richard, what say you?
Oh, my gosh. What is there not to say? I'll go quick. So I've said this before. There's a reason that governments, especially local and state governments, do not hire economists. There's a reason they do not hire those folks. Because an economist would say, hey, the federal government, 30-some trillion, the state government, my gosh, what a shell game. And all that federal and state money comes down to the local side. We're spending money that does not exist. It's created, digitized, out of nothing, which then sends our kids and grandkids into poverty, and poverty doesn't even describe it. Here's the key. Let's declare a fiscal state of emergency at the local level. Let's see what that can do to suspend collective bargaining, because the unions are holding everybody hostage financially. And the median household income in Shasta about 2 years ago was about $65,000 household income. The average government employee in Shasta County, of course, are state, federal, local employees, but they make at least $60,000 a year. One person makes $60,000 a year, and too many of them are making $100,000 plus, and that's salary alone. So it's not an income problem when the government employees are complaining about they need more money. It's not an income problem. It's a spending problem, all right? when they get raises and promotions, okay, then they get another vacation or they buy, you know, a toy. I mean, come on, it's a spending problem, not an income problem. So let's declare some local states of emergencies, and let's start doing the right thing, because we all have a moral obligation, whether you're elected or not, to not continue to dig this financial hole for generations to come.
Well, I think what they're trying to do is to eliminate the financial hole, but the way they're trying to eliminate it is by hiring 140 new people that in different jobs without having law enforcement or firemen. Go ahead. Janet has a statement here.
We are always going to have a spending problem when we have citizens demanding more and more services. Those services come at a cost. We cannot continue to do all the mental health and the physical health and the education
yeah.
and have all of the things that people think we can't live without at the city and county levels, state and federal.
Yeah.
As long as people demand more from their government, they're going to pay more to their government.
Well, how about this?
Well,
all the taxes that we pay, how come our city streets are such pits, literally? I live in a decent neighborhood, and my street is awful. We come in one way most of the time because you can get in two ways. The old way of coming in is just a pit, and some of those houses are, you know, they're very nice homes right there. And I question that. Why do we have,
yeah,
and that's just one neighborhood. I'm talking about our city streets, you know, why are they not being taken care of? Then you look at, like, spots on Airport Road. I mean, all over. It's everywhere. So why is this happening? Why is the city ignoring that? Why are they not addressing it?
Yeah.
I've got a question.
Let me make 2 points.
I've got a question first for you. No, you don't have to get out of here. I want to ask you a question. See, this is the thing, and you've been in law enforcement. So the way I understand it, it's about, we just talked about the money. It's the budget. It's the money. It's the money. Did I say the money? So you have 140 newer employees, and you're cutting police, and it's all about the money. It's not about it's, you know, why would you ask for, they're asking now, that the mayor came on Carl's show and said, we want a 1 cent sales tax added on so that we can get more police. But you just added 140 people over the last few years, and what do? And you're subtracting police because you added people. It's an enigma to me. What? Anyway, God.
So Janet said it, right? If the elected officials start cutting the fat and trimming and trying to be more efficient, they will no longer be elected officials after the next cycle because the unions, again, I've said it before, the public unions have a stranglehold on the system. And that's where the fiscal state of emergency is really key. We declare that. That puts, I don't know the exact list, but you declare that, that's going to slow down the collective bargaining. That's going to slow down all kinds of things. And to answer Wynn's question, yeah, every pothole that's not filled, yeah, that's salary and benefit increases that are going to, did I say, the public sector union. So it's immoral. It's selfish. I'm going to, as a former public sector employee, it's extremely selfish of them to say, I need more money now, but they don't finish the sentence. But I'm not going to worry about my kids suffering financially later.
We have reached the point where we have forgotten the role of government. And the role of government is to protect our rights. And our rights are a safety issue. So we should stress those jobs that protect the people safety-wise. And we have gone way beyond that. We have now become a government that wants to provide everything for people, not just protect their rights.
And that's not possible.
We've at all levels of government,
right?
Federal, state,
yeah,
city, county, our government is bloated, and every time somebody tries to do something about it, as Richard says, the union stepped up and say, well, you can't take away what we have.
And you have multiple unions fighting for the same piece of the pie.
Look at the Department of Education. It was formed in the first place as a political payoff by Carter. And now people are saying, oh, we have to have it. It's necessary. Why?
No, our
test scores are so abysmally low that nobody's getting educated. What's the Department of Education doing? And yet when Trump is trying to get rid of it, there are screams and cries. No, you can't take it away. Well, folks, it's about time we start doing things for ourselves instead of expecting the government to do it for us.
Did I mention that our sponsor was Jonesport?
It's
1600 East Cypress Avenue, Suite 2.
Yeah.
530-222-3223.
Yeah, great place. That's all I had on the budget side of the house, folks. So appreciate the time today.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, Rich.
Anyway, talking about Jonesport,
uh-huh,
we certainly do want to thank them for helping us with this program. They're located at 1600 East Cypress in Suite 2. 530-222-3223, 530-222-3223. They've got firearm safety classes, CCW classes. They can help you with all the regulations in California. Marshall, Patrick, and Jackie, along with a great crew of people, a wonderful crew of people, have really, really done a great job there. I know probably everybody in this room here, that's the only place we go if we need anything. Only place we go.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we need to have more rights with the Second Amendment here and start taking care of ourselves.
Well, amen. Yeah. You think?
A well-regulated
Wait a second. Don't
religion.
We already have the right?
Yeah, I think so.
We need to be able to, we need to exercise that right without fear of being thrown in jail by having, being open carry.
But if you don't know you have the right, you don't have the right.
Well, that throws the other thing on the face. You know, you try to walk around with an exposed weapon as a law-abiding citizen, and you're getting arrested.
That's what's wrong with
California. The same people that we want to get more of.
Yeah.
Well, how come they get to carry theirs wide open and exposed, and we can't?
Well, I think
there should be no right that the law enforcement gets that we don't.
Plus, there are employees.
There are employees. That's right. Our tax dollars pay their salaries.
One of my favorite sayings is, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away.
Well, see, the point is that they shouldn't have to do that.
Right.
And I understand. I think a lot of what I heard this morning, a lot of the reasoning for even having increases in the police department is because of the homeless problem and the downtown problem and the theft problem, those kinds of things.
And that goes back to emptying the jail.
That goes back to emptying the jail.
Of the state prisoners that need to go to the state prison, and then we can house all the criminals here locally, get them off the street, the streets will be safer, and we will be able to do whatever we need to do. We know where those guys are. They're not back out reoffending.
And we must remember also that there is no place in our law or our Constitution that mandates that the police prevent crime.
That's right.
There's no place like the Constitution.
Yeah, I love the Constitution.
There's no place like the Constitution.
It's a great rule book, isn't it?
Yes. Now, police cannot prevent crime, maybe by accident, but that's not their job.
But Siskiyou Steve is on the line, and he's going to say...
Good morning, Steve.
The Bible... Then the Constitution.
Charge, yes.
Right, buddy? Is that what you're going to say?
Exactly.
Okay. How are you doing today? How are you doing?
Exactly. I am doing great. I'm up here in God's country. But, you know, I'm turning into a Jesus freak. I swear to God. It seems like that's the answer. And we do not profess enough of the morals and values and traditions that come from with deep inside. I mean, I've been sober for 30-some years, and it's been a practice of spiritual development for 36 years. Because if you don't practice it, and if you don't stay rigid to the program, whichever program that you want to call it, you know, God, church, religion, whatever, it's a basic program of cleaning up your insides to love your country, your fellow men, and not be condemning each other to death, you know, like we keep doing, and fighting the same battles over and over and over again, when very simply, the answers are, you know, if you will, in the Bible. I find them elsewhere. A friend gave me a Bible a long time ago. I have not cracked it yet. I'm about ready to, but I don't really care for the verbiage of the Bible. It doesn't speak to me plainly like street language. But I find other books, and the big book says a lot of it right from the Bible, or from ancient spirituality, of the simplicity of turn your will over to the care of God, and He will take care of you. All the answers are there. But we have so much disgruntledness inside of our souls that it takes a long time, 36 plus years, to clean any of it up.
Is God telling you we need a state split?
Absolutely.
Okay, you hanging
Absolutely,
those? Are you hanging the flags up there?
I am.
Oh boy!
I've passed out two so far.
Are you getting any help?
No, I don't need any help. I mean, you know, Mark is probably the only other person on my side of the world. You know, there's other people active, but
gotcha.
You know, we have our own little, different opinions up here also with different things, and so we can't seem to come together on a lot of things, but we're working on it.
All right, buddy. Well, listen, thank you so much for the
call.
But
I think the conversation needs to be more about the values of, you know, I keep trying to, how do we get to mom and dad? How do we get to mom and dad? Because that's where the problem is. We're not getting mom and dad in city council and board of supervisor meetings,
mm-hmm.
You know, and the churches aren't speaking. They're 501c3s, you know, so they're speaking what they're told to speak, more or less. And, you know, you're talking about all the government employees down there. That's intentional, because they vote a certain way. to keep their jobs. So again, that's Big Brother stepping into your little county, our little county. We got this big ridiculous courthouse up here that's just a big eyesore, but it says California Superior Court, not Siskiyou County Superior Court. You know, I mean, anyway, thanks for listening.
Sure.
And I love you guys' show. And Tanessa was wonderful. I'm sorry she didn't make the assembly. I think she was running for assembly.
Yep, she was.
She was
a fireball. She's a fireball.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thanks, you guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, we do have another call on the line. Dave. Dave, how are you? What say
Hi.
You?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that Richard is totally right, and the proposal to raise the sales tax from 7.25% to 8.25%, you have to ask, why does the city need a permanent $30 million a year tax increase to close a $5 million deficit? And the reason for that is the out-of-control pension and other post-employment benefits unfunded accrued liability, which amounts to hundreds of millions of dollars for the city of Reading. And that tax increase isn't going to solve that. It's just going to kick the can down the road a few
Agreed.
Election cycles. And they'll be back for more
yep.
tax increases.
Yep, I agree. And have you ever seen a tax increase
go away?
Never. And the fact is that the people of Reading can't afford these city employees, okay? And no one in the private sector gets pensions anymore, and it's been like that for decades. And if the private sector can't afford pensions, the public sector can't either, because the private sector is the tax base, right?
So, Dave, do you have an idea on a solution? Go ahead, brother. You have an idea on a solution?
Well,
go ahead.
First thing, they're talking about hiring more people, right? And if
right.
they hire more people and put
they
them on pensions, what's that going to do to the pension deficit, right?
Right?
They've
right.
got to get them off the pensions and get them on 401ks, right? That's what public people get, right? So the politicians won't touch this with a 10-foot pole, because the public employee unions get the politicians elected, right? Just look at who funds their campaigns.
Right.
I mean, this is why we're not represented anymore. We in this country, we now have taxation without representation, because the local politicians represent the public employee unions, not us. Okay?
Yeah, two words, my good friend. Two words, my good friend. State split.
State split.
I have here a constitution that would solve a lot of those problems. And
if they call it
the State of Jefferson Constitution.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And we looked at all of that.
I just want to say that Reading has a $390 million unfunded accrued liability for pensions and OPEB, okay, other post-employment benefits.
I think it's higher than that.
Yeah. Well, it's insane. I mean, that's way over a quarter billion. Approaching a half a billion. I mean, that's just totally insane.
I think it is
right?
a half a billion.
What's Shasta County? I bet if you combine both of them, you're over half a billion.
Oh, you're well over half a billion. You might be a billion.
That's not just the white elephant in the room. That's the herd of white elephants in the room. And it's not going away. It only gets worse. And sooner or later, all the municipal and county agencies and state agencies are going to have to face that problem.
Uh-huh.
But I'll tell you, I'm from Butte County, and we just had two sales tax increases. Since 2024, Chico and Oroville, their sales tax went up from 7.25%, and now it's 9.25%. Okay.
Ouch!
Owie!
Well, at the federal level, go ahead.
Yeah, you guys in Shasta County are headed down the same path. Okay, this guy who's sponsoring the sales tax increase up there, right? He's a realtor, right? And what they're doing is they know that if they can get if the city council doesn't put it on the ballot, they can get a quote-unquote citizens, local citizens to do this, and then they only need 50% plus one to get a specific tax increase, which is more likely to pass. So that's, I mean, you guys are headed down the same path. You're going to get a city tax increase, and the county's going to see that, and they're going to want a tax increase too, because that's what happened in our county. So good luck.
Well, people do have to vote on it, so we hope that the people of we beat every other sales tax up here in Shasta County. And thank you, Dave, for the call. Great call, but we have another caller on the line. Shane, what say you?
Hi there. Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, just hunky-dory. How are you doing?
Living the dream.
I'm doing okay.
Good.
Good.
What's on your mind?
I have a question. Well, I know people are trying to raise
the sales tax here locally in Reading. And why don't, instead of doing that, why don't they do it like a pay cut, a temporary pay cut to fill that void?
Well, that's a great suggestion. The thing is that what they're, it isn't the people that want the sales tax. It's the city council that wants the sales tax. So let's get that part straight. The people don't vote for sales taxes here. They don't vote for any kind of tax here. We've defeated every one of them. So the thing is that, you know, and Dave's got a good point. You could hear the frustration in his voice and what they're seeing there in Butte County. We don't want to fall down that road, but we have to start understanding something. It's the city council asking for a raise. It's not the people.
Right.
It's the city council, folks. Go ahead.
You're right. And then, so all the employees for the city work for us. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so why can't we, the people, vote for them to have a pay cut temporarily?
Because no one's put it on the ballot.
Well, maybe we should do that.
And do you know what that costs?
Well, I know probably around $6 million.
No, not that much, but it's still a lot of money. Why doesn't the city council put it on there? Why doesn't the city council just do what they're supposed to do and cut some of those other positions? You know,
you're correct. You're right.
I mean, you're talking about, from what Tanessa said, 140 to 180. She doesn't even know the number, but it's over 100 new positions, and we're going to cut costs.
Right.
What they need to do is go through and do a budget line item, go through line item by line item, and redline all those that are questionable positions that they currently have on. Doesn't matter how long they've been there. Go through line item by line item for every single department within the city, and they'll probably find the money they need.
That sounds like a county doge.
And that's exactly what should happen. We should have a doge here.
Yep.
I'll volunteer.
And our founding fathers warned us
that
when more people are living off the government than paying into the government, your economy collapses.
You can only put so many people in the wagon before the guy that's pulling the wagon can no longer pull the wagon.
And we're there.
We're there. That's for
sure.
Well,
I think that people need to call the city council members, all of them. Call the city council members and give them hell.
And how many people?
Just say, hey, you need to start cutting things here, not police, not fire, but cut the other stuff. In fact, they don't make anything. So you can't really go after that.
At every level of government now, every level of government, we are seeing that we do not have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. You cannot solve a spending problem by giving more money to spend.
To spend your way out of the debt.
Yeah.
Well, this is their this is their philosophy. It's like the two farmers that are buying bales of hay for a dollar and selling bales of hay for a dollar. And one looks at the other one and says, we're buying it for a dollar and we're selling it for a dollar. We're not making any money. I know we need a bigger truck.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You bet.
You bet.
You guys have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you. Thank you. So so a nerve has been struck apparently with money and everything
Shocker.
Else going on.
Could it have something to do with the fact that at the federal level, Trump is actually facing the same problems that we are facing at the city of Reading and Shasta County, and he's trying to do something about it? And look at the pushback.
Yeah,
people don't want to give up their money, their power, their control by giving up those dollars.
Well, if the mayor wants to do a 1% tax increase, why doesn't he take it out of his pension that he already has?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's retired Highway Patrol, isn't he? So why don't he just take it out of his pension? I mean, you know, you're asking people for money.
Have skin in the game.
Have skin in the game, you know. Refuse your salary and your benefits. How's that? You've already got a pension and benefits. Refuse everything. Refuse it all. Give it back to the city.
Well, they always say if we have these high salaries being paid to city and county employees, and they say, well, if we don't offer competitive salaries, we won't get good workers in here. Well, maybe it's time to...
I call baloney on that.
Consider whether or not we need those workers.
Right.
Maybe that's a job we don't need to fill.
Well, when you look at, say, in the county specifically, I don't know about the city, but you'll have parts of departments that have a supervisor who supervises one person. So, why?
Well, that's so economically viable, isn't it?
No, it's not.
Well, with that, we're late on our break, but that's okay because this is a very good discussion. We need to make sure they are following what we want them to do.
There you go.
You will do what I say.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Amen.
What it seems, politicians in the big old cities are running everything. Our way of life may be simple and it's not for everyone. It's a state of mind, it's a state of change, it's the state of Jefferson. Sing it with me.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We like to thank the Redding Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Join Token's radio show every Tuesday night starting at 6 on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as hosts Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy Tuesday nights at 6 on KCNR.
Experience Glowing Wild, an illuminated wildlife lantern festival at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, California. Open select nights April 4th through June 8th, 7 to 10 p.m. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with Asian lanterns inspired by plants and animals from around the world. Plus food, drinks, live performances on select nights, and much more. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Glowing Wild Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Mimi Mosley here from Mosley Family Cellars. We'd just like to thank Redding Rancheria for their generous gift to us. It was so helpful and helped to keep us alive.
Hi, I'm Shelby Mahara with Squishy Doodle Face Painting, and I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support. They always help the community and always help to take care of us when they can.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
City Council sees the light. Right?
I'm not sure it's possible.
Thank you, Ben. Old Ben.
Old Ben.
Yeah, really.
It's old Ben. We had an old Ben, but old Ben was younger than our new old Ben.
Yes, that's right.
That's right, buddy.
You get harassed just like
you
everybody
rock,
else.
You know?
Just
hey,
like
I
everybody
tell,
else.
You know, yeah, that's fine. Good. Your age is great. Day. I don't even remember your age. Because I don't remember.
You're
was I ever that young?
Yeah, you're twice as old.
Was I ever that young? Okay, well, we have the phone ringing. I don't know what that's going
okay,
to
so
be.
Okay, so quick question. Yes. Can we, I don't know, we were just kind of chatting during the break. Is there a chance of doing something along with or parallel to an executive
yes.
order for city council to just do what they need to do and not come up with a vote to go for 1% and blah, blah, blah. Can they just not go through and, like I said before, line item by line item, make a decision on, okay, this is going to get cut, this is going to get cut, and live with the consequences?
Well, from whence is or from where is the executive order going to come?
I don't know.
Well, I know that one of the things
City Council's the executive.
Yeah. They are the executives, right?
Yeah.
So they make
can
that
do it.
Happen.
Right.
Yeah.
They're and Wynn made a good point that some people are our boss over one person.
Right.
And Tanessa was making the point that she just wanted one, if everybody would just cut one person.
Then cut the boss.
Yeah. Talking
it's
about
cheaper.
That one.
It's cheaper. And the one they're overseeing does all the work. So let's do that.
The problem is we have a spending problem that goes far beyond just people and this person and that
See?
Person. We have program
See?
Problems. We
right.
need to start eliminating programs, just as Trump is doing at the federal
yeah,
level.
Before you eliminate the people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, we have Chris on the line. Chris, what's
good morning,
to
Chris.
You?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Going back to this 1% sales tax, that whole premise is based on a lie. Because it's not a 1% increase. It's a nominal increase of 1%. When you go from 7.25% to 8.25%, that's a 13.8% increase.
I was trying to tell Tanessa that. Thank you, sir.
And I don't believe that the city needs 13.8% more of my money.
Can you explain? Can you explain how that turns out to be 13%? So our listeners understand that.
Okay, go from 7.25% to 8.25%. That's 1%. 1 divided by 7.25% is 13.8%.
There you go.
Right. Yep.
It's a nominal 1% increase, but in actuality, it's a 13.8% increase in sales tax.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right.
Everyone I come across, friend or foe, whether I know them or not, I bring this up to them, and I can't get anybody to say, yeah, I agree with the 1%. Every one of them says, no, we do not need that 1% increase.
But that's because you're old enough to have learned math when you were in school.
Well, that should be the basic. If you want to be on a public office, you need to know how to do math.
Exactly.
Amen.
Because you're dealing with real people's money. And I think everybody is doing a disservice when they broadcast this as saying a 1% increase.
I agree.
You can start on your show saying it's a 13.8% increase.
Well, in between shows, I did have that conversation with Tanessa Audette.
I called in and asked about it while she was on, and they didn't put me on the air.
Yeah.
But we need to beat that down because they got the upper edge by saying it's only a one cent increase. It's not 1 cent. It's 13.8%. I can't say that loud enough, and I can't say it often enough.
Well, go to city council and say it loud, brother. Go to city council and say it loud.
I've done it. I went to one of Kevin Fry's corner meetings at the Kaleidoscope and brought it up, and he backed down. He stopped supporting it as soon as I met with him.
Huh. Interesting.
Because he was pushing it for a while there.
Yeah.
Then I went to one of his public forums, and I brought that up in front of everybody, and the next thing you know, he completely dropped talking about a 1%, 1 cent increase.
You have it, brother. Chris, thank you very much for the call. Yes, awesome call.
Horse,
great stuff.
Beat this horse.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you.
You bet.
Have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Chris.
We have Laura on the line. Laura, what say you?
Oh, hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple points. So, first of all, why not do a hiring freeze? Don't hire any new people in the city. And then also, cut the city manager's salary. Fire that guy. Hire somebody else for something under $100,000. Because right now, as I understand it, he's making like $400,000, something extremely ridiculous. And then I want to talk about the property tax issue because cities and counties and school boards make a lot of money out of property tax, and they keep the property values high so that they can keep those revenues coming in. And I think there's some kind of coordinated effort conspiracy against the citizens. I do.
You're so cynical.
I am. And the real estate values are just crazy, astronomical right now. And they keep those artificially bloated for the purpose of sucking more taxes out of the people. And we need to get to the bottom of that, have, like you said, a local doge working on that as well. But one of the things on the table is the city council's talking about increasing the fees to Little League to try to cover this budget deficit they have. And I think we need to be very clear that Little League does not need to pay any more fees or taxes for the use of these fields. They maintain them. They take very good care of them. And Little League is something that, you know, all the kids of this city benefit from. And we don't need to balance the budget on the backs of these kids who some of them can't afford. I mean, Little League is not cheap. Even if you get a scholarship, you still have to pay for cleats and bats and mitts. And
A new mitt cost?
Makers. A new mitt is like $50.
Well, I'm going to channel Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand here, and I'm going to question why the city is paying for Little League in the first place.
Well, you know, the Little League fields were donated to the city, and they're maintained by the Little League. I'm not in the on the board or anything like that, so I don't know the details of the financials, but the Little League themselves bears most of the cost of maintaining and upkeep of those fields.
Okay, so, that's good news.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
That a girl.
All right.
All right, Laura, thank you. We have Mark on the line. Mark, what say you?
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
We can. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing okay. I just wanted to call in and let you know that the Second Amendment case finally got a calendar.
Really?
And yeah.
What's the date?
June 24th. We don't know the time yet, but it's in the afternoon. We know that much. And it's at the federal courthouse in Seattle, Washington.
Holy mackerel.
You mean a California case is going to Seattle, Washington?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
He's joking.
Yep.
You're not joking.
I'm not joking.
Oh, my God.
I wish I was joking, but I'm not joking.
For the love of...
Okay, help us out. How does that work?
Is it still the same three-judge panel?
Yes, we believe so. Unless there's a last-minute switch, yes, it should be the same three-judge panel. And we have done research, and Judge Van Dyke does sit on cases in Seattle, so it's not unheard of, apparently. But they just put the case wherever they want.
Wow.
Now, I wonder if they put it in Seattle to make it more expensive or harder to get to, huh?
Yeah, who'd have thunk it? It was already expensive to drive down from Northern California to Sacramento, which is not Northern California. It was expensive to do that for, you know, the cost of gas, and then you have to stay down there overnight because you have to be there early the next morning. And, yeah,
right.
It's costly for all the people that come to it, and people from the east, eastern foothills and everything else. Anybody wanting to come to that court case from Southern California, think about that. If they're down out of San Diego, they have to fly clear to Seattle just to go to the court to hear what's going on and to participate in their own state's Second Amendment rights.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I've been saying this, of course, for years, and we all know this personally because of the CFR case and so many other things that have happened lately. But judges steal your liberty. The court steals your liberty every day.
Oh no,
no. You know, yeah. But this is an interesting thing because this panel will give me a unanimous decision. I'm pretty well convinced of it. They did it before, and the case has only gotten stronger. It hasn't changed for us. It's gotten better. And for the state, the case has gotten weaker because of Rahimi and a few other decisions that came out of the Supreme Court. So they have less of a chance. We have a better chance, but got to fight our way through to the end here. And that means going to Seattle on June 24th or sooner, you know, whatever. And seeing what happens. And now, it's also possible that between now and then, the panel itself could say, and if this is within their power, and to be honest with you, I kind of hope they do, because it would bode very well for us and very poorly for the state, that no oral arguments are required. I mean, there are no new facts to enter into evidence. The judge... And remember, you don't go to appellate court just because you don't like the way it turned out the last time. There has to be some judicial procedural problem or irregularity or something like that. In other words, the appellate court is not supposed to say, well, we like your case better than the other case. That's not really their job. Their job is to rule on the irregularities of the federal court judge, and then if it's required, then to weigh in on the case. Well, what our request to them is that they take this case de novo. That means the federal court utterly failed to do their job in any aspect. In fact, in every aspect, they failed to do their job. This has been sent back to the federal court once to do their job, and the federal judge, Mueller, once again failed to do her job. So twice she's failed to do her job in the eyes of the appellate court, in fact. And so this panel, we're asking them, you ordered this federal judge to do certain things, which she failed to do twice. And so we're asking you, de novo, to step into her shoes and to adjudicate this case according to the facts of the case. And here are the facts. The federal court never answered the only question we asked of it, and that is Penal Code 25850 the absolute ban on the open carry of loaded weapons anywhere in public, and 26350 the absolute ban on the open carry of unloaded weapons anywhere in public, with very few exceptions, and those exceptions are irrelevant to the case. And are those questions, are those penal codes unconstitutional? The judge obfuscated, she confused the issue, she tried to relate it to carry permits, which is not a question before the court. We don't care about the carry permit. If you want to beg the government for a carry permit, please do. But this case is not about a carry permit. It is about the open carry of loaded weapons, which is your constitutional guarantee, your pre-governmental, pre-constitutional right to defend yourself, your family, your community, your state, and your nation. And so we're asking the three-judge panel to please answer this question, because the federal court utterly and completely failed to even address it. And we believe we already know the answer, because they answered that when they ordered the federal court to do their job. And she failed to do her job the second time. So I think we got a win here. I'm pretty darn sure with this panel, we've got a win for sure. But,
wow.
So what they could say is, look, nothing here has changed. We ordered the judge to do something. She didn't do it. Now we're going to do it for her. We don't really need an oral argument. What's the state going to say? Public safety, guns are dangerous, guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens, no good. Guns in the hands of the government, good. You know, what are they going to say that they haven't already said? And the answer is nothing. So I'm kind of hoping that at some point the panel will say no oral arguments are required. We're going to do this with a summary. In other words, we'll look at the paper already submitted and we'll give you a ruling on it. That would save a ton of money, and it would save everybody a lot of heartache and time. Now, we may get that and we may not. I have to be prepared to go to court. And what's the big question with the court, as usual? Oh, I know, the money.
Yeah, every time.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the status, though. And I mean, like I said, if they don't pull a fast one and change the panel, and I don't see procedurally what they would use for that excuse, because this panel has retained jurisdiction of the case. So I guess they can do anything they really want to do bad enough, but I don't see that happening here.
Who would change the panel? Who would change that?
Who could change it?
Yeah, who would or could?
The Chief Justice of the Ninth Circuit Court probably could take it upon himself to intervene in that process, but I don't see what the legitimate grounds would be to do it.
Is that Van Dyke?
No, he's not the Chief Justice of the Ninth Circuit, no.
Oh, okay.
He is simply one of the judges on the panel.
Gotcha. All right.
Mark, if they do say that no oral arguments are required, would that be well in advance, or would it be a last-minute thing?
Well, you know, they do whatever they want. How many times has this case been date changed night before?
Oh, man.
You know, so they do whatever they want, and it would depend on the circumstances. We just have to be prepared to roll with it, because let's face it. I mean, look at the Trump administration. The federal courts don't abide by any rules of procedure. They don't have the courtesy to tell people things in advance. They think they run the world. They act like they run the world. So I wouldn't be surprised if the judicial branch does whatever the hell they want to. However, in this case, we do have a favorable panel, and one can only pray that justice will prevail here, and we have a better chance than most other Second Amendment cases, because at least we think we have a favorable panel ahead of time.
Wow. Okay, so this is going to be held at the U.S. District Court then, correct?
Yeah, U.S., the federal court in Seattle, Washington, and I forget the name of it.
Is that the Nakamura building?
Yeah, that's it.
Nakamura. Okay, it's William Kenzo Nakamura, Nakamura.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right.
And it is not, I encourage people to go if you want to see the process. It's not required to put pressure on the judges or to do anything. It would just be go because you want to. But,
right.
But this is pretty much, the die is already cast on this. So it's pretty much set what's going to happen. We don't need to pack the courtroom to make that happen. So come if you can, if you want to. It's a very interesting process. If you've never seen one of these circuses, I highly recommend it.
And the date again, my friend. The date again, my friend.
The 24th of June.
Okay.
And this is to determine whether the people of California have the right to defend themselves or not. That's the question we're asking. Do we have rights here in California or don't we? Because if we don't, I want to know so I can leave.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. A million people voted with their feet last year. Probably a million more will vote with their feet this year. And yet the governor of California and his minions in the legislature, and I count Republicans very much amongst those minions,
yep,
are stealing your liberty, stealing your money. We can't seem to get away from them. We don't have representation. There's no... I don't see anything on the horizon to give us representation except state split. And as usual, with conservatives in California, the circular firing squad is already lining up to shoot each other in the foot instead of getting state split. So I can't really see that happening. I mean, we already have counties that say, well, we don't want to do it your way. We want to do it our own way, and we're not going to participate. And, you know, we'll show you. We'll vote with the Democrats to stop this. And, yeah, you know, so, okay. That's fine. Let's at least start with the Second Amendment and see if that wakes anybody up. That's my thought.
Now, do we have the address here where people can...
For the courthouse?
For the...
Yeah.
Sending money to Mark.
Oh, sending money to Mark. Yeah. Oh, that's going to be changing.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Well, they can send it to the P.O. box.
Okay.
That never changes. Okay. If you guys want to support Mark's case, please do. Make the check out to Pecan, P-E-C-A-N, P-E-C-A-N, and in the memo portion of your check on the lower left, write 2A, and then make it for any amount that can help Mark out. We really appreciate it. And mail it to P.O. Box 751 Palisedro, P-A-L-O-C-E-D-R-O 96073.
One more time in the address, please.
P.O. Box 751 Palisedro, P-A-L-O-C-E-D-R-O 96073, and you can address it to Pecan, P-E-C-A-N, on the envelope, or to Mark Barrett, either one.
And also, if you want to donate by credit card, the website is tokeepandbear.com, TOKEEPANDBEAR.com. All lowercase, no spaces, and you can donate by credit card on the website. And look, I think I have about $3,000 in the account right now, and I need 30.
Yeah.
Because every time we go to court, it's 20 or 30,000 every single time.
They like to get our money, don't they, buddy?
Well, I mean, there's a point to that.
Yeah.
They do it to outspend you, and
that's
then
right.
You drop your case, and then there's no liberty, which is what they want. And I mean, you look at the forces arrayed against us. They want to steal your liberty. They've been doing it for 100 years, and they're getting away with it.
Yep. Well, we're coming up on the top of the hour here. They're going
to cut
us off. But anyway, support Mark Baird. Support the Second Amendment. Support the state split.
And it's good news that this is finally moving forward.
This is awesome.
Really
news.
Great news.
Yeah, good.
Well, folks.
That we get to go to Washington. State of Washington.
State of Washington.
Yeah. And it's at the William Kenzo Nakamura Building. At 700 Stewart Street, Seattle, Washington. Just a little bit of tidbit there.
Let's get that done, and then time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done this time.
Amen.
Well, it's all.
Can smell it all.
KCNR, Shasta Redding.